Rob Isbitz. Welcome back to Investing Experts. Always great to have you on. Thanks for making the time once again.
Thank you very much. Always good to be here talking markets.
So we've been on with you talking markets and also talking portfolio setup. You've been on before how best to navigate portfolio setup within the markets that we find ourselves and how to play offense and how to play defense and how to work the angles. How you've also been on before talking about your yield portfolio. In terms of portfolio allocation and setting things up to best, you know, set yourself up for success, how are you thinking about your portfolio these days? How are you talking to investors about how best to navigate the markets vis-a-vis portfolio strategy and setup?
Sure. And I do have my whole current portfolio in front of me. And so I will be able to speak to that as we go ahead. If you don't mind, I think rather than sort of shoot right to the end of the process, which is what to buy and sell and when to buy and sell it, maybe just a little take on kind of how I see things here, if that's all right.
Sure.
So, look, I'm not one of the sort of typical investment strategists, portfolio managers, analysts, whatever, that is going to just sit there with a crystal ball all day. Every investment can go up in price at any time. And they often do, but it's just a matter of how much risk is attached. And I am kind of reminded of that Mr. T character in the Rocky movie, where they asked him his prediction for the fight. And he said, my prediction, pain. And as far as how I fit that into the way I am thinking about current markets, I think this is probably the highest risk market of my 38-year career. Not necessarily that it would lead to the biggest decline in stocks and rise in interest rates, although those are both possible. But I think that there is a, if you will, a pandemic of sorts in that I just don't know if today's investor, professional or retail, is quite as prepared. I think the buy the dips mentality that went on for so long, fueled by easy money, I think that era is over, and I'm seeing it in my charting work. You know, I've been charting for over 40 years, and so it's kind of how the market tells me its story. That said, I never assume that it's a one-way scenario. The highest risk periods, like the one I see now, have also been where the groundwork is laid for some of the highest reward or largest returns. So what I'm saying is not the market's going up or the market's going down. I think what I'm saying is it's going somewhere, and it's going somewhere of great magnitude. And so I try to have my cake.
When you talk about the risk, is that just what you've been talking about previously, which is the modern makeup of the market? That's what's tripping people up, and they simply can't navigate it well enough. And so you've got to be playing offense and defense.
That's correct. You're a good study on my work, and that is truly appreciated. We have not dealt with inflation. That's the big one, of course. Okay. And of course, everybody assumed that inflation was one and done. Oh, it spiked up to 9%. CPI comes down into the threes, everything is fine, Fed's gonna lower rates 7 times this year. Well, that was like 3 months ago, 4 months ago, and look where we are now. The narrative has changed, but what never really did change was that it was a high-risk environment to begin with, and like I said, that's when you can get rips like we've had since October, but there was always a threat of reinflation, and now we're seeing it. So that's one, and look, there's a lot of ways to deal with inflation. I mean, you literally can buy inverse ETFs, single, double, or triple size, depending on what your interests are. I've used them all. And if the stock market or the bond market or this segment of the market goes up or down, you can make a lot of money. You can make it over a short period of time, or you can make it over an extended market.
So how have you been playing the inflation trade personally, or how would you advise your average retail investor to play it?
Well, I have a few tools of my trade. And let's divide the world, like you said, into offense and defense. I think anybody can play offense, right? Because the markets generally go up over time. It was 70% of the time they go up. But I just don't know if people focus enough on the other parts. And when they hit, they can change lives. You know, I'm almost 60 years old, and I have a lot of baby boomer peers that I think need to at least understand the concept of defense. And that's what I try to sprinkle in all my articles. So as an example, okay, I own a portfolio based on my YARP stock method, but I am approaching the stocks a little bit differently. I want to get that portfolio, I want to get 40 names in there by the time I'm done. I have 18 names in there right now, so I'm a little less than halfway through. But here's the key. I'm using methodology like the Seeking Alpha quant ratings, which I think are fantastic, other similar sources, and of course my charting and just experience managing portfolios. That's great for picking the names, narrowing the watch list, getting down to, okay, here's 40 stocks, you know, and I can discuss at length. But the key is how much of your portfolio allocation is in those stocks. So right now, my stock allocation across those 18 names is probably somewhere in the 40% range, okay? But I've got a way to put the hammer down to first defend against a market decline, which I think is in progress most likely. And then after the first phase where I'm defending, I'm exploiting it. And so here's specifically what I own, not a recommendation, but this is what I own, okay? 1.5% of my equity portfolio right now is in S&P or SPY put options that expire on September 30th, end of the third quarter, and they have a strike price of 470, which is about the same as 4,700 S&P. So what does that mean? If the market crashes to 4,000 in the next 5 or so months, that thing will be a multiple. It'll, I think, make enough money that if my stock allocation is still only about 40%, it basically represents about an 80%, what they call notional value, of my portfolio. So if the market were to fall from, you know, where we are these days, I don't know, about 8% or so, that will go from being sort of a very light hedge that'll help a bit, you know, on down days, to all of a sudden it's like owning an 80% short position. Well, by that point in time, if my stocks are still 40%, well, then I'm effectively net short and I'm making money every time the market goes down. To me, the 40 stocks are hopefully going to be things I'm going to own for the long run. But the weightings of those stocks can be anywhere from 1% to 5% at any time. And I look at when the dividends are paid, the X dates, things like that. I look at when earnings are coming up. And of course, I'm charting it all the way. So to summarize, core group of stocks in the portfolio, one. Second part is be tactical about the weightings. So this is very different than I think what most investors do, and I don't mind being different, you know. I go from, it's not a matter of, do you like this or do you not like this? Are you buying it or are you selling it? Well, the answer very often is yes, you know, and I've written a few articles about this recently. One was on Dow Chemical. I said, you know, I want to have at least a couple of basic materials stocks out of the 40. So Dow is in the portfolio, but it's going to be more like a 1% or 2% position for now because I don't particularly love it right here. I like it longer term. I like that it is a stable company with about, I think, 107-year history. I have an affinity for companies that have been around more than 100 years, because even though the management of the company has changed over time and the direction has changed and headquarters locations have changed, there is a history and a legacy. And I have just seen over time that companies have been around for, a century or so, can usually figure it out over time. But in the case of something like Dow Chemical, member of the Dow Jones Industrial Average, no relation, I think they will figure it out. The chart and the metrics that I use right now say it's a profitable company. It yields in the mid fours, 4.5, 4.6, I believe, at the time of the article. And I'm okay, taking a 1 or 2% position in something like that. What I won't do is take a 5% position, because I need to see a little bit more evidence. So take that, multiply it by 40 times, and that's what I'm doing in a portfolio that is full of, I guess, if you want to put it in sort of basic rating terms, long-term buy and hold. However, to what extent I am holding it, 1, 2, 3, 4, or 5% times 40 names. So I can't own them all at 4 and 5%. The average would be about 2.5. That is how I'm constructing that portfolio. And then the third part is, but what if we have an environment like I see today where I literally cannot find, I keep looking every day, I go in, I cannot find a stock chart that I can be confident enough in to really take a meaty position in a stock at the same time. And here's the last couple of parts of it, right? So you've got the stocks, the tactical weighting, once the research has been done. And I'm kind of walking people on Seeking Alpha through my research process with each article. Then you've got those disaster put options, which could also produce positive returns in a really bad down market, especially if it's sudden. And then I've got two other pieces. Well, one is lots of cash. I mean, the cash position in this portfolio right now is 55%, with a couple of T-bill ETFs and some cash, hopefully ready to get deployed into stocks. I can play defense with T-bills or shorter-term treasuries. The two-year right now, close to 5%. That looks pretty darn good versus what most dividends are paying. And the last piece is what if I'm totally wrong and the market just takes off during earnings season or sometime into the summer? Well, I also have about 0.5% of the portfolio in an S&P call option, and the strike price is way up at like 570 on the SPY. So, 5,700, it's a long way from here. But hey, that same strategy last October, did pretty well, right? Because you had this sudden vault higher, and the way options work, you don't have to get anywhere near the strike price if you have time. The market kind of factors in the idea that, hey, it could go to 5,700. And I'm not saying it will or it won't. I'm saying if it goes to 4,700 or 5,700, I've got a chance to make a lot of money on one of those two option positions. I've got the cash, and now it's just a matter of the hard part right now, which is finding stocks that meet my technical criteria, finding profitable companies with Seeking Alpha ratings. That's easy. But the technicals are the tough part, and that's because of some macro issues.
In terms of the 40 stocks that you're looking to get into the portfolio, how did you arrive at that number?
Interesting. I went back and forth. 40 was at the high end because I ran a mutual fund that was very similar in some ways to the way this is. I just didn't have all the tools. It's many more. I'll put ETFs in here. Instead of buying a bunch of small cap stocks, I'll include a small cap ETF or something like that, or anything that doesn't fit the the dividend stock yield at a reasonable price, YARP methodology. The way I invest in stocks, it's going to be hard for me to ever have like an Amazon or a Google in there because they don't pay a dividend. And even if they did, like Apple, it's so low, or even Microsoft. So I will buffer the portfolio with the call options. And also I will use, maybe not the Qs, but something of that nature to get that exposure. But other than that, the main equity process, 40 names, is enough so that I can run my 1-5% per position weighting and make it so that if I am, let's say theoretically, all 40 stocks are equally appealing to me. Well, then I can take a 2-2.5% position in each of them. Okay, some people would call that neutral allocation, or equal weighted, or maybe a hold if you're in a rating system. But I will own them all at about that level. Because I thought about doing that with 30 or with 20. I thought, you know, then I'm going to get into like 7-8% positions at the high end. I don't trust things like earnings blowups and things like that, parts of the modern investment world that where, you know, you can own a perfectly nice high profitability dividend stock, you know, paying you 4-5% yield, and then you lose 15% on price, and you can't do anything about it, and no stop orders don't help because, you know, if it closes at 100 one night and it opens the next morning after a really bad earnings report at 85, doesn't matter if you had a stop order at, you know, 99 on a $100 stock, you know, you're going to be sold at 85, or it's going to go off the board if it's a, you know, if it's a stop limit order. I hear a lot of people talk about, well, I have stops, so I'm good. I don't think you are. So
in terms of, you mentioned, you know, that macro factors weigh in and technical factors weigh in. Could you use one or two examples in terms of looking at the macro factors as we are, you know, coming close to the middle of the year, how you're thinking about the macro and the technical and how you're playing that within the portfolio? Can you kind of shed some light on that for investors?
Absolutely. So I mentioned inflation, and you know, even if it's not a secular issue, okay, you know, I mean, my career started in 1986 in New York City. So I've lived through the 87 crash. I've managed money through the dot-com bubble, and the we've talked about how I started managing my first mutual fund in August of 08, and the market fell 55%. So I'm, if you will, if this were a football team, you know, I would be going for the defensive coordinator position, you know, because I feel like, you know, offense is relatively easy to play compared to defense. So inflation is the issue. Fed and other central bank money flooding is an issue. But the other two, and it affects the stock selection, absolutely. One is indexation. People maybe don't realize this, but a lot of the reasons that stocks go up and down has nothing to do with intrinsic value, with apologies to, you know, Benjamin Graham. But the other thing that is so big a part of the market, and I see it just by being a chartist for so long and seeing how that art and science has evolved over the decades, algorithms run a lot of the trading. And frankly, they don't care what Benjamin Graham taught Warren Buffett in school, intrinsic value and all that stuff, discounted cash flow. I'm not demeaning the work of anybody who practices that. I'm just saying that a lot of investing today, to me, especially equity investing, is not about the way things should be, it's the way things are, and that's what I get out of the charts. And part of the way they are is if you need to be aware, I think, investors need to be aware of whether their stocks are going to be moved by indexes. So you take Dow or 3M, another Dow component that I've written about recently, or even Cisco, CSCO, all of which are in the portfolio, all for the same reasons, because They are quantitatively profitable. Okay. I'm not going to predict the future. Sometimes people will say to me, well, how can you buy that? They haven't made money at the same rate, and it's been such a loser and this and that. And my response to that is, yeah, that's probably why it comes up as, let's say, long-term undervalued technically, right? If all the news were good and everybody knew, then there's no technical and quantitative value in that. And that's kind of what I'm after. But, you know, I mentioned three Dow stocks. Those three stocks are not as influenced nearly as much as, let's say, the Mag 7, or if you are a stock in a particular industry, let's say, you know, when the transport stocks move, when the utilities and the REITs move, especially when they're moving like violently down, usually, especially lately, they all fall together. And it doesn't matter how good your analysis is when markets get liquidity driven or lack of liquidity driven, and the selling pressure starts. And my, I wouldn't say concern, but I'd say my observation about the current macro market environment is that all these things that have been bubbling up that have been risks that were not realized are now starting to be realized. And it wouldn't surprise me in the coming months if, you know, we look back and say, wow, the market had a lousy week, a lousy month, a lousy couple of months. And then people are trying to pinpoint why in the news, you know, and it's really just that an overdue coming back to earth for so many parts of the market. And that to me is why, while stock picking is always important, if you do it in isolation and you're not using either cash, options, or inverse ETFs, or if you can find low correlated assets, right? But I'm suspicious about things like, you know, cryptocurrency being that, because more often than not, you know, when the stock market is getting hit and the NASDAQ's getting hit, I see Bitcoin falling too. You know, look, I do a lot of trading as well. And so, you know, I'm very grateful for the idea that you can buy put options on, you know, DJT, the SPAC converted into a social media company run by a former president or associated with a former president. I am grateful for the fact that Tesla has not really come through in a lot of people's eyes. I don't follow these fundamental situations too closely, but I do follow the charts. And being able to own put options or own single inverse ETFs on individual stocks, which you can do now, you know, these are all ways to play defense. I know they're not in sync with a buy and hold investing, but I guess what I'm saying is the best way to buy and hold is to make sure that when buy and hold is failing miserably, like it is threatening to do, not saying it is, because I don't know. I'm just playing the odds, so to speak. But if markets are threatening to just implode to the downside over some point in the balance of the year, well, that is a period where, rather than just saying, oh, I'm going all to cash and I'll get back in, that's market timing. So to me, it's using all of these defensive tools, which I've just tried to outline very quickly, from position sizing to the different defensive weapons. I like to refer to them as trying to prevent they are weapons to prevent mass financial destruction in one's portfolio.
And in terms of navigating options, how able are your average retail investor able to do that?
I find a very wide range. Let's say, and let's take a live example. It doesn't really matter what stock it is, but I wrote about it recently. There are a lot of good comments on it. So let's talk about 3M, okay? Not the most volatile stock, so the options aren't that thrilling, but let's use 3M. So I can buy the stock where it is And if I buy 100 shares, I'm, you know, going to pay 100 shares times the price. I could also buy a call option, one call option, which gives me the right at my choosing up until a certain date to buy 100 shares of 3M, probably at a slightly higher price. So I might miss out on the first, you know, few percent. Okay. But at least I've only put up a fraction of the money that I put up for the stock. So if you do this for $100 stock, you can pay $10,000 for 100 shares, or, you know, you might be able to pay $100 for an option that gives you a chance to, well, maybe miss out on the beginning part of it. But if you want to own it long term, you can eventually convert that call option in the stock, or you can just take the profit on the call option if you're more sort of tactically minded. And the same way on the way down, if you own, I mean, I did it with SPY. It's not maybe the closest hedge to my portfolio. So I may look at other things, things related to interest rates, because these are higher yielding stocks and they tend to be more sensitive to interest rates. But the intricacies of options are not that intricate. If I take that same situation that I just said, I say, you know, I own 3M, but I'm a little worried. I'm not worried about 3M falling by 5%. I'm worried about it falling by 20-25%. Okay. I would say that's probably my concern about every stock I own right now. And a lot that I don't own yet, because I'm not ready to make that move in these conditions. You know, call me chicken. But if I want to, let's say I own 100 shares of 3M, to stick with that generic example, well, I can buy a put option that would basically say, if 3M in the next, oh, let's say 3 months, falls by more than 10%, I'm basically not going to lose any more money. That's my cap. Now, how is that different than just saying, oh, well, I'll just sell it if it goes down 10%? Well, if you sell it down 10%, guess what? You don't own the stock anymore. And the way markets work these days, like I said, when risk is high, reward is also very high. And so, I mean, we've seen it just in this cycle multiple times, you know, a quick plunge, 20%, and then boom, it's back up 20%. And frankly, part of the issue and the reason that I am really kind of not doubled down, probably quadrupled down on my use of options is because of the way markets move.
Anything else you want to get into in terms of specific names or kind of points of light to shed on portfolios these days?
I truly do believe that over the next 5 years, a lot of stocks will appreciate in value. However, when I look at chart after chart after chart, I mean, I looked at the S&P 100 yesterday in prep for this call to see if I could come up with something where I could say, hey, you know, what can I buy for some upside? I've looked at my YARP methodology. And the first part of it, which is it's cheap on a yield basis versus its history, that works out really well. But it's the price trend that's the problem. You know, there are sectors of the equity market, and I'll take one for an example. In an inflationary environment, energy stocks should have some legs to the upside. I guess I could add gold stocks to that too. What I'm starting to see in the charts is that they're getting a little bit pooped. They've had nice runs, and maybe it's just a consolidation period that they need. But you know, when even those things are starting to look, let's just say, risky, okay? You're taking a lot of risk for the return you're seeking. That's what it all comes down to, whether we're talking about stocks I own in my portfolio now, like the healthcare names, Baxter I own, Kimberly Clark in that field, Kinder Morgan, which is, you know, very popular with the yield crowd, you know, NextEra. I even own some RTX for defense. But the point is, what I own is based on solid companies, but the weightings are so low because I just don't want to put that much money at risk. And that's what leads me to defense. And I guess the last thing I would say, because you know some folks may be listening to this and just say, oh, he's a perma bear. Nope, not a perma bear. Can't wait to make money. Not too many perma bears own out of the money call options on the S&P 500. You know what I mean? But here's what it comes down to for me. And if I sound frustrated, I'm not frustrated. I'm excited because here's why. One of two things is going to happen when you have a situation like this. Since the beginning of 2022, here are the returns, including dividends, for a few parts of the market. Long-term bonds, down 18%. The ag bond index, down 5%. Okay, there hasn't been any money to be made there. The 1,000 largest stocks in the Russell 1000, okay, equal weighted. The ETF for that is EQAL. The average stock, including dividends, since the beginning of 2022, 28 months ago, is down 2%. And so what that tells me is we're coming out of an environment where it was exceedingly difficult to make money without having a winner offset by a loser. And most of the winners, you know, were a smallish number of giant companies. The average dividend stock since the beginning of 2012, SPYD is my measure there, 80 largest yielders in the S&P 500, 0.4%. And if you go back with that same, you know, highest yielders in the S&P 500, go all the way back to February 19th of 2020, that was the peak before the pandemic hit. The annualized return is 4.2% a year. Okay. So about the dividend. So it's been so long since you could fill a portfolio with stocks that would get you dividend growth or both that weren't, let's say, household names, that one of two things ought to happen from here. There's a possibility the whole market kind of follows it down and these stay in the dumps for a while, and then they become better values later. Or we haven't really had as much a bear market as we've had just kind of an up and down leading to flat market, and a new bull market can start. I think it's possible, but unlikely. The third part would be that nothing really changes. We'll look back and say, wow, 5 years of buy ratings on stocks and more of them didn't work out than did. And that's not the fault of analysts doing good work. It's the market environment we live in and coming off of, 15 years of zero interest rate policy and excessive spending and piling up government deficits and things like that. So not a bull or a bear, a realist, like I always say.
Yeah, we can't control everything, but we can do our best to navigate it. I think a lot of food for thought in terms of how best to navigate these markets and our portfolios as investors. So thanks for another terrific conversation, Rob. Appreciate it. Anyone interested can find more about Rob and his analysis and some of the articles we mentioned if you go on Sun Garden Investment Publishing. Many of you already know that. Rob, thanks again.
Thank you so much, Rena.
Any articles discussed today, you can find links to them on our show notes. And all episodes have transcripts available on Seeking Alpha. And for those wanting to follow breaking news and general news coverage of the markets, come listen with us at Wall Street Breakfast. We have morning episodes released before 7 a.m. Eastern and afternoon episodes released around 12 noon Eastern. We've got Wall Street Breakfast and Wall Street Lunch for all your market news needs.
Just a reminder, anything you hear on this podcast should not be considered investment advice. This is for entertainment purposes only, and you should seek advice from a licensed professional before investing. If you enjoyed the episode, leave a rating or review on your favorite podcasting app, and we'll see you soon with a new episode.